Coming up next, not much of anything, actually. Sorry, folks. This episode's going to be pretty short. What happened was, I should say, this is the booketing that you're listening to, a short, sort of a bonus episode today, as opposed to a full episode. My name is Nathan Robertson, your humble and obedient host, agent, provocateur. Over there, we got Pastor Jacob Menzel, pastor of his Master of Reading, and we've got Brandon Chasteen, the scholar, who's a baller of reading. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Doing fine. So basically, what happened is we recorded an entire episode of Fahrenheit 451, the movie, the HBO movie. And the entire reason we read that silly book was because we were excited about this movie. We read the book. We were surprised, perhaps, to enjoy the book.
Yep.
And then the movie came along and we watched it and we recorded an episode about it. And then that episode had technical issues and was consigned to the scrap heap of history, and you'll never hear it.
Yeah.
We do not have the space in our schedule to go back and record a whole episode. True or false?
True.
True.
So
it was our most efficient recording yet.
Yeah, it was a very efficient recording.
Because you guys had to get out.
Yeah. We had business to attend to. It turns out, though, this might be a blessing in disguise because there's actually not that much to say about the HBO movie. We did get an hour out of it, but it was basically us just repeating ourselves saying, it sucks.
We should tell people why we were so excited about an HBO movie.
Yes.
That we didn't have access to, we were going to have to do trial subscriptions to in the first place.
Why were we excited about the HBO film of Fahrenheit 451 that we were going to have to do trial subscriptions in order to access?
After taking the time to read the book. Excited enough about this movie, we read the book, we took out trial subscriptions for HBO. It's because it was starring Michael Shannon and Michael B. Jordan.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
We like those guys.
Yeah, both of them are on hot streaks right now, or they were until this Fahrenheit 451
derailed.
And so it seemed like HBO was, they got Michael B. Jordan and they got Michael Shannon. They were making a big push for this movie.
Big prestige project. It premiered, I believe, at Cannes Film Festival, and which is, you know, the film festival, if you're not aware.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's exciting stuff.
Yeah, so we decided to watch it, and we ascertained the fact that it did not contain a bunch of HBO-ish nonsense, and so we were excited to watch it.
But,
Brandon,
it watched like a Lifetime movie.
It was crummy.
It was terrible. It was
really bad. It felt stitched together.
Mm-hmm.
Felt poorly shot. Felt cheap.
Felt very cheap.
I don't think we... Did we say that last night? But it felt cheap.
It felt like they ran out of money or they never finished the script. It felt like something went wrong. What I said last night is I would love to know the story of how this film was made because it felt like there was something that happened either in production or post-production that just made it so they couldn't actually realize their vision because it's really hard to believe that this what we saw was anyone's best case scenario.
Yeah. I mean, this is HBO.
Of this movie, yeah.
They produce amazing, high-quality stuff.
Yeah.
Our biggest concern going in was that there would be a bunch of stuff we couldn't watch.
Nudity and stuff, yeah, which is pretty difficult for them.
Because that's usually what HBO has, but they tempt you by having...
The best actors, the best writers, the best...
in an amazing storytelling and all that stuff, but this was just bad.
Yeah. Didn't have any nudity. Didn't have the HBO nudity. Also didn't have the HBO storytelling quality.
Yeah,
control.
The screenwriting was just bad.
Yeah.
It changed a lot of the best stuff in the book.
It really felt like, I mean, I just said this 2 seconds ago, and I said it like 4 or 5 times yesterday, but it really just felt like they must have run out of money or something. Like, it felt like you were watching excerpts from a longer, better movie, and you were only seeing certain scenes, and they all kind of maybe worked and taken on their own as a scene, but then none of it made emotional sense. You didn't understand why a character was going from A to B. There's just like missing chunks.
There are a couple of things that really sort of illustrate this for me, and that's that there was at least one scene in the movie where I was almost convinced that they just reused the footage from an earlier scene.
Yeah.
Like,
it just felt cheap. Yeah.
It looked like they had a couple of sets.
Like the firemen are running out to get into the fire truck.
Yeah, that one, yeah. The firemen are running out to get into the truck, and it's, let's go, let's go. You know, it's this like classic 90s primetime TV. Mm-hmm. Let's go, this is why we do this. The bad guys are on the move. Let's go, this is why we burn. Go, 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 rah, rah. If they didn't reuse the same footage, they reused a different take. Mm-hmm, of the same footage. And that's what it felt like. There are like a couple of camera shots and a couple of different scenes, and they just like plowed through the 3 or 4 different locations.
It felt like they had maybe 4 or 5 sets to work with.
Yeah.
The outer outside stuff was really limited. Mostly you were like either in one room in the fire department
or
whatever
you call it. And you maybe had one establishing shot of a house or a building.
And then some stock footage of a cityscape that they could put some Blade Runner special effects over. But it was always
bouncing to and from and that.
You think it was Bradbury's estate commissioned this to make the book look better?
Maybe. I don't know. It's 0 for 2 as far as adaptations.
I don't know that it makes the book look... I mean...
It just doesn't have anything to do with the book, really. I mean,
it's different. So they tried to politicize it, too. Mm-hmm. Or I felt like they were trying to politicize it. They were trying to make you think of Trump's America.
Well, they didn't even really do a good job of that.
But yeah, they didn't do a good job of it. It just felt cheap and silly and poorly done. The rebels, so at the end you have the rebels mm-hmm. who are supposed to be the good guys.
Yeah.
But they all feel paper thin.
Yeah, we don't get to spend any time with any of them. Or
there's a really silly thing that happens with you, them trying to make you think, oh, maybe they're bad, but then they're actually, there's no depth of character to any of this stuff. Mm-hmm. We talked a lot about Children of Men.
Yeah.
A movie that does the same thing that this movie is trying to do very well.
And also apparently completely ditches P.D. James' novel, just like this ditched Bradbury. But
still,
in that case, to great effect.
Yeah, so the rebellion in that book is, they're people, so they're both good and bad.
Right.
But in this movie, it's just, if they're going to go that direction, then they need to just do it completely, like the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, it's really simplistic the way they wrote this movie and really hackneyed. There's a part where he's falling in love, of all things, with the beautiful young resistance fighter lady, and they're in an apartment by themselves as the world crumbles around them. She pulls out, what?
A harmonica.
A harmonica. The only thing that would have been worse, as I said last night in the last episode, would have been a music box that she wound up that played a little thing while a ballerina or a horse or something twirled around. That would have been more cliched. But second only to that in the hackneyed cliche pile is a harmonica.
She put on her Bob Dylan wig.
Yeah. I wish. That would have been awesome. And then we got to talk about the bird. We cannot let the bird go unmentioned by us, even in this condensed review of the... Jake, tell us all about the bird. The bird that the film gave us.
Yeah, so I guess maybe the first thing you need to know is that this is a modern adaptation, so they've futurized actually everything.
But Jake, Bradbury was writing about the future. Whatever do you mean?
Bradbury was writing about a retro future that can't possibly be the future. So
he was writing about the future through the eyes of someone that was writing in the 1950s.
He had his mechanical hounds and all kinds of things that just... And so this is if Bradbury were writing today, what would the future... Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So this is like... Blade Runner was a reference that somebody made throughout there earlier. It's kind of like that.
Yeah, it felt like Diet Blade Runner.
Diet Blade Runner.
So here's the thing. Like that, what do they call it? What are the resistance? Eels. The resistance, they're called eels.
Did we ever find out why they were called eels, by the way?
No, I don't know. They're called eels for no discernible reason. They have...
A MacGuffin.
And it's called...
The Omni.
Omnis.
Or Omnis, or... Yeah.
The Omnis, yeah. So they figured out how...
Coward.
They figured out how to write all of the history and knowledge of humanity, all of the books, onto a single gene or strand of DNA.
Just all the books, all the entire record of the internet pre-evil corporation takes over the world.
Yeah, that's right.
All the films, all the paintings.
All the music, everything.
All the internet?
The whole internet. Yeah, no, they did say that.
Yeah, no, it's right there. Snopes.
He's right. It's all there written on this little tiny,
E-bombs world.
Fraction of a gene or something like that. I don't know.
In other words, really great sci-fi stuff here.
Yeah, and it's in this DNA of this bird.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've got to get
not a metaphorical bird, not a mechanical bird, not
an actual bird.
It's a bird.
Yeah, and they've got to get the bird alive to Canada.
Yeah.
So the scientist,
for some reason, is kept by a boy genius who can quote from any book ever written.
13,000 books he has memorized.
Yeah, and it doesn't really explain why he's important
or why we should
care. He ends up dead.
Yeah,
and nobody really seems to care.
But what matters is not that he has all these books memorized or anybody else has books memorized or are embodying a book, but that this bird has to get to the scientists in Canada because the scientists in Canada are going to be able to replicate that gene.
Yeah, because Canada is it's the good guys.
Canada is the good guys. The scientists who are able to then replicate this gene are going to implant it in all kinds of animals,
mm-hmm.
not just in birds, so that humanity's knowledge will live on in the animals as they breed and whatever, and it'll always be there, and then it can be extracted later.
just because you're a screenwriter and you come up with an idea after smoking a bunch of pot at 3 a.m. in the morning, you're supposed to throw that idea away and start from scratch the next day, not actually keep it. Anyway, go on, Jake.
So, I mean, that's it. There's really nothing. The bird's got to get to Canada so the scientists can put these genes in all of the animals. So
that's
that
not a subplot. That's the main plot. That's the denouement of the movie.
That's what we're driving
towards. Can we get the bird to Canada?
Yep.
It's like Children of Men, except for instead of a pregnant woman, we're going to replace it with a bird that we have to get to Canada.
And the reason they need Guy Montag is because he can get some kind of tracking thing that he can put on the bird so the bird can be tracked.
It's
or something.
Really corny and dumb. And it all, spoiler, it all leads to the most on-the-nose, ridiculous, symbolically deep moment.
They're trapped in a barn.
It's burning.
It's just Michael Shannon and Michael B. Jordan playing. Jordan is Montag and
Shannon's the evil
Shannon's
fire
Beatty.
Chief guy.
And they're in a barn, and the barn is burning, and everybody important has died. But these two guys, there's the bird in the cage, and Montag has pulled it out and has it in his hands, and he looks up and he sees a hole in the rafters, and he's able to release the bird, and the bird escapes Beatty's flames and makes it through the little hole in the roof. They all die, and the bird goes soaring, and we follow the bird soaring across Ireland and across Europe and across the plains of Africa and all over the place, and you know the knowledge is free, and then it gets caught up in a flock of other birds, and really pretty shot of swallows swarming,
and that's it.
And knowledge is going to spread through the
just as long as this bird has other bird babies.
Yeah, I don't know how they're ever going to find it, but
well, as you pointed out, I think yesterday it'd be wonderful to see the sequel where people are just brutally murdering birds trying to extract
the right DNA. How do we get this out?
We know that transponder just fell off. Or it broke or something. So
people are just ripping birds apart. Where's the Mona Lisa?
Nicolas Cage is going to...
Yeah,
exactly.
That's the next National Treasure.
Oh, man. Was there anything good about this? So, it literally ends with a non-metaphorical scene of him releasing a bird into the sky with it containing all the knowledge. And it's so deep and beautiful. And I just wanted to throw up. Oh, man.
And in doing, they lost one of the most deeply moving parts of the book.
Yeah.
Which is the end where everybody has memorized a book. You have the nuclear explosion, the town is gone, and they're walking towards the town to go and put society back together with humanities.
Right. Yeah.
The humanities department of college is walking back.
Yeah. to save the day, as they would.
Of course. But still, it's one of the more, it's the most effective part of the book, and they just completely lose it in the movie.
Yeah, they lose Mildred, who's probably the most effective. She's a cipher of a parable of a... You know, but as a symbol, she's quite nice in the book, and they took
and
her
she
out.
She allows Montag to have something to bounce against other than Beatty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They take away Beatty's suicidal nature.
Mm-hmm.
Though I agree. I mean, you mentioned last night that you liked some of the things they did with Beatty's character.
Yeah, I thought Michael Shannon did a nice job in the movie, and they gave him the most interesting material to play.
Easily the best part of the movie. Yeah.
There's a part where he is writing down little sayings. Like you get I guess paper and pens are illegal too, but he keeps a secret stash and
little tiny scraps of paper. Yeah. It's either quotes from books or it's his own little thoughts.
And he writes them. He gets drunk and writes them down, which is a nice conceit for that character. And Shannon's good at playing that kind of stuff. But
if they wanted to keep that, then they should have still kept his suicide.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it would have been a great thing to build toward. What they do is they get rid of Montag's family and they make Beatty his family, his father figure. And they've got these eye drops that keep your memory suppressed.
Oh, yeah. I must have taken one of those eye drops because I forgot all about that thing.
Yeah, so like he's always having these flashbacks to his dad.
Really on the nose backstory.
And he stops taking the eye drops and then he realizes that, oh, his dad had books and he was killed by the firemen. And
by Beatty, Shannon, actually.
By Shannon himself, yeah, by Beatty.
They had everything there.
But they have this father-son relationship, Beatty and Montag. And
every point where they could make the story more obvious, more soap opera-ish, more simple and stupid and for children, they did it. It's confounding. Like, what were they thinking when they made this?
Well, they weren't thinking.
No, I guess not. I mean, it's not a good Trump meta. You know, if it was just progressives trying to beat up on the current administration, I could see that, but it doesn't even feel like it does a good job of that. I mean, there's just not much to it.
The biggest stretch
the costuming
is the fact that
was straight out of Moonwalker.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it was just a Gestapo chic sort of... If you saw a bad... Yeah, it is that, exactly. It also looks like a bad adaptation of Shakespeare or something, where it's like, it's Shakespeare, it's King Lear, but it's set in futuristic punk, whatever. That's the aesthetic of this thing.
I made the point last night that this felt like a high schooler's attempt to rewrite. Like, so it felt like a bad thesis statement given by a cheesy teacher where they would ask their students, reimagine Fahrenheit 451 in the modern world. And some... high schooler who thinks they're hip would write this. Because
some witless high schooler that likes to read Camus, some high school girl.
Well, Dostoevsky.
Or Dostoevsky,
because that's the pivotal book of this movie. It's not Ecclesiastes.
It's notes from the underground.
The underground.
Replace it with
one of the worst books Dostoevsky wrote.
Well, even giving them that it's a great book, let's just assume Notes from Underground is great, which I don't think it is.
It's existential, but, existential fanboys love that.
But even assuming there is something you could get out of that book, there's no way that Montag, of all the books that he could read that would mean something to him as a man who's never read a book in his life, Notes from the Underground is not going to be a helpful first ever book. You know,
but if he has his manic pixie dream girl there explaining it to him, maybe it is.
Yeah. I didn't like the Clarice in the novel, and then they made her, instead of making her into an old-fashioned 1950s manic pixie dream girl, they made her into a new-fashioned 2000s manic pixie dream girl. I mean, it's just really lame.
It was bad stuff.
They take out the threat of nuclear holocaust, which I pointed out last night, was something that has suddenly become relevant again. Like, the novel, for years, for decades now, has felt outdated in that it ends with a big nuclear holocaust, which isn't something we're really scared of. But now, in the last couple of years, we're scared of it again. So they could have kept that. And maybe they started production before everything got tense with Russia. I don't know.
In North Korea.
But still, man. Is there anything you guys liked about this movie?
Michael Shannon.
What about Michael B. Jordan? Jake, you're a big Michael B. Jordan fan.
I am a big Michael B. Jordan fan. I like him a lot.
You love Creed. You swear by that movie.
I think it's the best Rocky movie. He does a great job in that movie. I think what happened in this movie is what got exposed is that Michael B. Jordan has been in the hands of a really good director for the best part of his career, or good directors. And they really just lean hard on him to just be charming and charismatic, and
which he is in spades,
but they just overplayed it. I felt bad for him. I felt like he was betrayed by the material because he was required to give more than he could carry, and he can carry quite a bit.
Yeah, well, he didn't actually have a script to work with. He had to make these emotional leaps in logic that the script didn't give him, so he just had to do it by emoting through his soulful eyes. And it's like, what? There's very few actors that actually could pull that off.
They just kept making him do it over and over again.
Yeah.
More than he could handle, and more than I think is reasonable to ask of most actors.
Yeah, I agree.
So it was a waste. It was a waste.
Yep.
But they sure did get some subscriptions out of it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Some canceled subscriptions, I think, in our case, perhaps. But
We thought that this looked worthwhile, worth burning a 30-day, and it really even wasn't worth that.
Yeah. If you want to do it, the movie doesn't have anything the too HBO-y. I wouldn't say don't watch the movie on moral grounds.
I wasn't trying to imply that. I was just implying, you know, for me, I downloaded the HBO Now app on my Apple TV signed up, and now there's an HBO app on my Apple TV that a kid can actually accidentally click on, and there's all kinds of trash.
All right. Well, that's basically what we said yesterday. We said it at greater length, but this is the...
was succinct, deserved.
We omitted needless words.
There we go. Yeah. This is the E.B. White review.
White and Strunk would be proud of us. Anything else we need to say about this turkey?
No.
That's the true bird that should be associated with this novel, or with this book, a turkey.
That would have been funny.
if it was just some ugly polecat or something.
Anything, what would anybody be interested in hearing how they handled?
They took out the wife. They took out the mechanical hound, which Brandon yesterday said he was disappointed by that.
Yeah.
Because you would like to see seen that mechanical hound.
And then I made fun of him and said that if they had actually tried to put a mechanical hound in, then we would have just made fun of them.
We would have made fun of them for it. But my point was that now we have these four-legged drones that actually get out there and run and look terrifying.
Mm-hmm. They are terrifying looking.
And that was the perfect opportunity to have the mechanical hound.
Bradbury actually successfully predicted that we have something in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's there. It's in the cultural
zeitgeist.
Uh-huh. So, and for them not to use it and instead go with a bird. It was really strange.
Yeah, it was very strange. Is there anything else?
Self-immolation scene.
That was fine, I guess. I mean, how do you mess that up?
Most faithful adaptation.
The TVs in the rooms.
They changed that into a whole like Black Mirror-ish takedown of social media, which I thought was pretty hackneyed and lame. And actually, the way they punish dissidents is by denying them access to the internet, basically. That's like people, you get sentenced to 5 years, 20 years, whatever, without the internet, which, what a commentary on our addiction to the blah, blah, blah. I hated it, just like I hate Black Mirror. Only this was lamer than Black Mirror. This was like a bad episode of Black Mirror. And that's like saying it's a particularly sadistic Nazi or something.
That's what
like that.
I mean, that's what I thought when I watched it. I thought that this could have just been a bad episode of Black Mirror and taken less of my time.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's really bad. The books that they chose, I thought were pretty lame. The books that you saw burn, it was always like, you always kind of felt the filmmaker's virtue signaling through which books they chose, which how could they not? But I didn't like the way that the virtue that they chose to signal. It was things like, oh, I don't know what.
It was the easy stuff.
It was the easy stuff. The high school kind of, a high schooler's
idea. They did have Borges in there.
Yeah, they got some Borges. To the Lighthouse was in there, whatever that thing's called.
Let that thing burn.
Yeah. A lot of stuff that I was like, yeah, go ahead, guys.
They had Marquez in there.
Marquez was in there. Harry Potter was in there.
Bradbury was in there.
Bradbury was in there. It's all
the meta. Funny if when they burned the book, if the movie had just stopped.
just some weird meta.
Yeah.
That would have been pretty great.
Yeah, about 5 minutes in.
Title credits.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, go to patreon.com/thebookening to support us. I'm sorry we didn't get to donor shout outs.
Hey, guys. Just last week, we announced that The World We Made was coming out in June, and we asked people to support that show at patreon.com/out of our minds. And part of our hook was, hey, you know what? The Bookening makes more money than Out of Our Minds, the Ministry of Tim Bailey, The World We Made podcast. And we were sort of trying to guilt shame all of those fans into giving.
Mm-hmm.
And they passed this back up. So guys,
hey, come on.
Come on.
I mean, just between us girls, come on. Who do you really want to see make more money?
I mean, I think it was kind of awesome. We were kind of cheering on the inside when The Bookening overtook Out of Our Minds, and I sure would like to see it happen again.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Come on. Yeah.
It's a good race.
Yeah, so let's keep us in the running. Thank you for everyone who supports us. It does really help us get this work done. We would literally
We need it.
Yeah, we need the money.
You guys don't know how encouraging it is to see a new donor.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's,
well, and the other thing is our donors are a neat little community of themselves, and we love sharing stuff behind the scenes with you guys and have been making plans to get you guys more involved in decisions that we made. Oh, we came up last night in the episode. It didn't make it. We had a t-shirt idea.
Yeah, what was it?
Terrifyingly. Oh,
no. Terrifyingly right.
Yeah, terrifyingly
The Bookening,
right.
Terrifyingly right.
Oh man, the genesis of that, I don't even remember. We'll never know.
It was, we thought it was hilarious.
It was because we were talking about our critic.
Critic.
Yeah, people need to give us reviews. We want Apple reviews, whatever those things are.
iTunes, yeah.
The kids know all about it. Get on there and give us good reviews.
Get on your www.
Yeah. But the guy who claimed that we didn't know anything about C.S. Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said our host was
deeply irritating.
Deeply irritating.
Granted, all right.
He said that Brandon wasn't a scholar.
Yeah.
Not granted.
Despite, you know, having taught at the university level and, you know, all that other stuff. Who cares about that? And then we got C.S. Lewis wrong because we said C.S. Lewis was a little weird on homosexuality. And then we ended up looking up the quote in Surprised by Joy where he says that pederasty was far from being the worst thing that was happening at his school.
But did in fact have a touch of the divine.
Yeah, he said it had a touch of the divine.
So all we remembered was, it's a little weird. It's a little uncomfortable. Then we looked it up and we were like, oh,
it's
shoot.
Really, really
it's
bad.
Gross.
Yeah. And then we were talking about, it was you, Brandon, and you were saying every time this happens, we thought that we were right. And then we get somebody saying that and we think, oh, well, maybe we were wrong after all. And then we look it up and realize that we were terrifyingly right.
Terrifyingly right.
It's always worse than we could.
Yeah,
it's always worse. We're actually always more charitable.
Right. Like, wouldn't it be nice to just be wrong about one of these things? Oh, yeah, C.S. Lewis is better than we thought he was. Nope.
Often when I'm doing research for the show, I imagine I'm standing at like the mouth of this big yawning cavern,
mm-hmm.
and you can feel like the moist, cold air on you. You're like, do I really want to go in there? Like, okay, here we go.
Yeah. Ernest Cline, I'm going to do some spelunking here.
If you give $25 or more at patreon.com/thebookening, you get to vote on a t-shirt, which you will get, and we'll sell them or whatever, make them available to everybody,
yeah, sure.
But you'll get to vote, nominate some quotes or nominate something for a t-shirt. So all our $25 and $50 level supporters, and
yeah,
there's one we're nominating it for you. Terrifyingly Right.
Terrifyingly Right.
T-shirt. The Bookening. The Terrifyingly Bookening. Right.
I think that should be the title of your biography, Brandon.
There we go.
Terrifyingly Right. The Brandon Chastain story.
Somebody write that.
The greatest value, in my opinion, is still that $50 level. It sounds like a lot of money, and it is.
Yeah.
It is a lot of money, but you get a donor shout out, you get the t-shirt, you get input into the t-shirt, and then you get a new book every month right along with plenty of time to read. So we're about to send out King Lear,
mm-hmm.
and we've already ordered Blood Meridian, which is after that. Personalized copies of those in your mailbox every
yes,
month.
Yes, very personalized.
Very personalized, as personalized as it gets. Guys, we're short on time. Let's do donor shout outs real quick here.
Let's do it.
You got your Lily of the Valley.
Lily of the Valley.
Andrew and Esther the Lovebirds.
Andrew and Esther the Lovebirds.
The Inscrutable Jenny Z.
Robert and Rhonda the Lovebirds. John and Jill.
John and Jill. Little Baby Max.
The Lovebirds. Hey, Brandon.
Hey, Nathan.
Do you have anything that you need to be transported?
You mean other than my soul when I read books?
Yes. Other than that.
Yeah. I got quite a few things. Actually, my parents just moved into town. The Lovebirds.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they could have used really high-quality transportation because that U-Haul was expensive and not that great.
Maybe what they should have done is gone to David's Mighty Men.
Yeah.
Transport for all your transportation.
They should have done that. We talked last time about this should be the David's Mighty Men show.
Yeah, the David's Mighty Men
That'll
show.
That'll have to be for the next...
Yeah. We'll get that. My beloved Mother Beth.
Jane Katie are cold in love. Cheese.
A Benity and Danity. The Lovebirds. Nathan, not me.
Eric and Catherine, the Lovebirds. And the little one on the way.
Congratulations.
Yay.
Professor and Mrs. X. The Lovebirds. And a big donor shout out. Welcome to Annie Oakley and Jimmy Dean. That's
me. Welcome to the family.
I don't know. Annie Oakley and Jimmy Dean. That's just, of course, Jim and Annie.
I think it's good.
We'll see whether that nickname sticks.
They can join the old Texan family here.
Yeah, but Jim and Annie, thank you. Welcome to the donor shout out. Sorry.
I think the contextual Texan from now on needs to be brought by Annie Oakley and Jimmy Dean.
There we go.
I love having segments being sponsored.
Brought to you.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
It is Annie
the
Oakley and Jimmy Dean.
Brought to you by Annie Oakley and Jimmy Dean.
There you go. Guys, go.
Jimmy Dean is going to, I mean, we could get, I guess, sued for that, right?
Oh, yeah, it is a sausage company.
Sausage company?
That is not the sausage company.
No.
No, it's somebody's name.
Yeah, it's Jimmy. Yeah. It's a nickname.
Jimmy Dean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jimmy
spelled J-I. No.
James Dean?
Yeah. Well, we could then get sued by the estate of the actor James Dean.
We'll just call it Jim Dean.
Jim Dean and Annie Oakley.
Jim Beam.
There you go. We're so good at coming up with nicknames. Thank you, Jim and Annie. Welcome to the patron family.
Yeah,
we're so happy to have you.
Should probably tell them the whole thing. They're not going to hear themselves on the Odyssey.
Yeah. We record these episodes out of order. We've already recorded the next three or four or something like that. So through the end of the Odyssey, you will not hear yourself shouted out because you weren't a donor when we recorded those. So sorry about that, but you'll be shouted out come whatever comes after the Odyssey.
Lear.
No. The Big Chill.
The Big Chill.
The Big Sleep.
A movie directed by Lawrence Kasdan, if I'm not mistaken, the screenwriter of Star Wars, who this very week we released our review of Solo over on Sound of Sanity. You can go listen to that. A movie that was surprisingly somewhat enjoyable, unless you thought about it at all. That's my mini review. Hey, thanks for listening, Brandon.
Hey, thanks, Nathan.
Thanks
for hosting.
You're welcome. Thanks for interacting, Jake, and saying smart things and stuff.
Glad to be here.
And you said smart things as well. You didn't just listen.
Thanks, Nathan. You did too.
Oh, thank you so much, guys. Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Bookening. Goodbye. Until next week. Farewell.